It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
We've all had golf trips where you're crushed, but I don't know what the thought process is to say I'm gearing down and I'm going to hump the whale.
I don't know either.
Or the shark.
Me neither.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Well, I'm not really in the mood for Twitter today.
How come?
Well, it should be a fun afternoon. We got two game sevens tonight.
Yes.
Jacked about that.
I am fired up. I think we all are fired up, right?
The people are chirping you about treat it like a game seven. Is that what it is?
Absolutely not. Okay. I sent out a poll question. I thought this was a reasonable poll question 5 minutes before the show. I'm just intrigued to see how people are going to respond.
Okay.
Which game seven tonight is more interesting to you? Which one is more interesting for you? It's very simple. It's really not complicated. You're not going to hurt anybody. You're not going to hurt yourself if you vote one or the other.
Right, right.
And immediately I send it out. Gary writes in, actually both for me. Peter, both. Clive, why not both? Of course, you can be intrigued by both, but which one interests you more? Why do you have to be that guy?
That's honestly my answer, too.
But you have to be intrigued by one more than the other, Noodles.
I think it's got to be the Washington Capitals to see if they can push through and get to the third round. I mean, Anaheim, if they hadn't won a cup, they would probably, it might even be a dead even heat, but the Washington Capitals and Ovechkin, the adversity they faced, is this the stuff that can finally put them over the edge is more intriguing to me. Obviously, Connor McDavid's going to be around for a long time. Like I said, Anaheim's already won a cup, so their past failures is obviously something to talk about, but it's not. They've got it done before.
Yeah.
So
It's an interesting question because I honestly am both. But
Don't be Gary. Don't be Clive.
I'm trying to think about it. Because, you make a great point. You said this yesterday, Brian, and I wholeheartedly believe this. If Washington wins tonight, they're winning the cup. That's how I feel, because they're on a roll. And I watched Justin Williams' interview this morning. Like, he looked like he was being interviewed in mid-October. Like, that guy is cool as a cucumber.
I didn't realize his stats are as impressive as they really are in Game 7s.
Yeah.
He is 7-0 lifetime in Game 7s. With 14 points in his career. Seven goals, seven assists. 14 points in seven game sevens. So I expect Justin Williams to show up tonight. I'm with you on Washington Pens.
I think Washington as far as legacy, because I know Anaheim and it's the game sevens and Randy, I wasn't there for it and all that stuff. In the Oilers, it's a great story, but Washington has won the President's Trophy a couple years in a row. They have struggled to get out of the second round. They can't get out of there. And everyone's talking about Ovi. Well, Ovi can't, you can't win with Ovi. He's a coach killer. He's all of these things. I personally would love to see Washington win just for those things. I love the Pittsburgh Penguins as well. I think it's a great story. But Pittsburgh, we've been down this road before.
Pittsburgh, I don't need to see Pittsburgh continue to succeed. They're a fun team. Watching Sid do what he does is obviously very impressive, and
right,
getting to continue to watch Phil and the potential for Kessel to have a mic in front of his face
for
another few rounds or a couple of rounds obviously is intriguing. But, yeah, for me it's Washington because we've been talking about this for a decade. A decade. Can you get it done? And if they cannot get it done tonight, they are the definition of chokers in North American sports. As for the Oilers-Ducks, I understand why it's real close. Like, I'm not saying it's 90-10. I'd go like 55-45 in favor of Caps Pens tonight because I'm curious to see how McDavid responds in his first game seven.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's going to have a lot of them throughout his career, but I also think Edmonton has dominated this series for the most part. I'm not sure it should be at a game seven. If the refs didn't screw over the Oilers the way that they have, they'd be sitting at home waiting to play Nashville. So I think that's going to be a hanging storyline. If Edmonton loses tonight, you know we're going right back
to the review.
To the review in game three, game four.
Right, right.
It's all going to happen again. And as for the Ducks, Pierre LeBrun was on, I think, the morning show on the lunch earlier today and said if they lose, big changes are coming to Anaheim.
Yeah.
Because they've done the coach thing. They're not going to blame the coach again for failure on home ice
in
Game 7.
Though, Brian, what does that mean? Are they going to trade Ryan Getzlaf?
No, I think obviously.
You're going to trade Corey Perry where he couldn't be at his lowest value?
Nobody is taking Corey Perry.
No.
There's not one team in the league that would take Corey Perry.
We'll pull his contract up, see what's left on that baby. Probably 4 years at eight something.
But be careful with what you say. Nobody's taking him.
You think someone would take Corey Perry?
Absolutely. Corey Perry's a hell of a player.
Yeah, not anymore, playing. Noodles. He's not anymore.
We said you had the same narrative 2 years ago about Ryan Getzlaf. The game's catching up to him and all that. When people have down seasons, they have the ability to come back. That's my point.
Okay, at some point, though, you have to acknowledge that maybe the game passes you by.
Absolutely.
Like Jerome McGinley, it's here.
Yeah, well, he's
right?
40.
No, of course it is. But it was really here for him a couple of years ago.
When he had 60 points or 55 points?
You never acknowledge when a guy isn't the same player, ever. It's always, he'll get it back together 100% of the time.
No,
and
what I'm calling
it's not going to happen.
What I'm calling out on is if a guy has a bad year, you write the guy off that his career's over.
I'm not writing him off.
I'm just saying that I want to find a middle ground. That's my point.
I'm saying.
I believe Corey Perry had a down year this year. And if a down year is 53 points and 19 goals, like that, there's teams that would take that.
Not at $8.3 million or whatever his cap is.
Well, there's teams that still have to get to the floor. If you are a team that's trying to mid-level get back, everyone looks at contract value. I understand it's a cap world, but you still have to house a team for minimum, $54 million? Like or 50.
Greasy pronger contract comes in and
I guess you're right. All I'm saying is that I'm just not ready to write him off. And I understand 100%. I don't want to argue with you about this because you have a valid point. All I'm saying is that I believe if major change has to come. Yeah. You make a great point. His value isn't that high because he hasn't played well in the playoffs. But if we find out at the end of the playoffs, the guy's playing with a broken something. Which, some guys hide stuff, right? Alex Steen played on a broken foot the other day. I'm giving him a little bit of.
Listen, I love Corey Perry. He's a future Hall of Famer.
Right.
Hart Trophy
three
winner.
More years.
He's got three more years of what? 8.3, I think.
8.6. 8.625.
Like 8.6 is that much more egregious than 8.3?
Yeah, it's
still
underground.
In the same ballpark.
Round up.
It's not like he came back and said it's 4.5.
Yeah, it's high.
$8 million plus is $8 million plus for a guy who will be 32 in a week.
Yeah.
So I just look at his game and I think, he's still smart. He's an agitator, but he's never been the fastest guy.
No, you're right.
And the game is so fast and so young.
But all I'm saying is that I think, to O's point, if they're going to blow something up, it's trading a core piece on the back end for sure because they have to. If that's Fowler, who has been there for, if they lose tonight, there'll be five times in a row that they've lost in Game 7 situations.
I think just big picture to throw out the term major changes are coming in the way the game is now. It's almost impossible to do. Like the fire sale or
you're right. That's a good point. It's because you have to have it by osmosis. Now, if Washington loses tonight, would you say there's massive changes there coming? But they're coming because Williams
contracts are up.
Anaheim's a different ballpark because a lot of the contracts, to your point, Brian, guys have term and are locked in. So you would have to do some finagling to move players out. Like Kessler's another guy who has term and at 32 years old. They've got some young players, Raquel Silverberg.
Well, and they've got a really young defense. They got John Gibson, who's really young. They've got a mixture of players, but I do think it would be ideally, if Anaheim loses and they commit to wholesale change, it would probably be the veteran guys they would hope to look
right
to move. But Perry, at that price tag and where he is, like someone texting in saying he sees Corey Perry as the new Danny Heatley. And when Heatley fell off, man, did he fall off. Now, right. Perry hasn't gone down that road yet. There's no denying that. He's not 50-plus points.
That's a
and he had a couple of big games. Well, but it happened to Heatley. There's a better example. I used Ginla. At some point, a 50-goal scorer for 3 years in a row turned into a guy who couldn't play. It happens. Happens in every sport.
Yeah. Right.
And it's very difficult to predict when it's going to happen. But you don't want to be stuck with the $8.6 million player who all of a sudden it's like, ooh, we got to – put him on the third line and he's going to score 12 goals and he can't keep up anymore.
Well, I would take him on my team anytime. And for $8 million, if he could fit him in, if you're not a cap team, like Ottawa's not a cap team. Like there are teams. I mean, Ottawa's paying Bobby Ryan 7.25. Like Bobby Ryan's had a little resurgence here in the playoffs, but he had a real poor regular season. Like it happens. Like guys don't have their best season every year. So it'll be interesting to see. I'll bring it back to the Leafs. Who's going to have an off season next year? Like, not all of them are going to have career seasons. I said I would bet my house that Nazem Kadri is not going to score 30 goals next year.
I would probably make that same bet, but at $4 million, if he gives you 20, like that's where this is the world we live in, where you have to live up to your contract.
Correct.
And you're also, I've told you 100 times, you're as good as your bad contract. So if you have a guy making $8 million that scores 20 goals or has a bad season, you're like $8 million for that. But if it's four, it's like that's what the good teams do. They never really miss on the big contracts. It's like when you're paying the guy $8 million plus and he's having a god awful year.
It's staring you in the face.
That's right.
But name me an organization that doesn't have one bad contract.
The Leafs. In terms of who they're actually like playing every night?
Well, they've buried it through financial cap circumvention.
Right. But in terms of who they actually have going into the lineup, the 18 guys on the ice, which one is the bad contract?
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. But you can't. I'm talking from an organizational standpoint. They've got bad contracts. They were just able to bury them. McCulloch, Greening, Lake, Robida, Loophole. Let's go on with the list. So I would argue that they're the top of the list. They've just been able to manipulate it through gray area channels. So it's
valid. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. But
what do you think they've said to those guys, by the way, when they go away? Just go away and...
No, they probably say this is a business and this is what... I don't know. I haven't spoken to
anyone. And the other question is, how come other teams haven't done it? Because I'm looking at L.A. If they want to try to get better, why wouldn't they do the same thing?
You got to answer to an owner. How would you, if you're a general manager, you've got to make that phone call and say, I signed this guy to a 7-year, $6 million contract, and I've got to make him go away. How do I do that? And the owner says, let me get this straight. You spent $42 million of my money, and we're trying to flush this guy down the toilet somewhere.
Oh, no kidding. In any other business, that's like, get out, you're fired.
That's fireable offense. But,
well, you need to be a new hire is what you need.
Exactly.
You need to be Shanahan who comes in, maybe not day one, but within the first 12 months and says, this is what it's going to take. So if you want me to do it, this is what it's going to take. If you're the guy who signed all the deals and then you go back, you're toast.
Well, Lombardi, like Rob Blake has come in and he's got to be creative here at the draft and the expansion draft because what are you going to do with Gabrick? What are you going to do with Dustin Brown? You go right around the league. I guarantee you, like Calgary, Dennis Weidman's contract was 5.25. Now, they played him, and he ended up being kind of up and down, but I'm sure they'd like to move that contract out. You know, Andre Pavlik in Winnipeg got sent to the minors at $4 million. Like, it's just interesting to see. I think it's limiting the least amount of damage. To your point, Brian, the Leafs had the luxury of financial backing and a plan in place. Yeah, there really isn't a bad contract of the guys who play every night. But
well, someone texting in, who is the bad contract on Pitt? And listen, if they're going to win, clearly Crosby's worth every penny, Malkin's worth every penny, Letang is worth every penny. I guess you could argue just because of what happened with Matt Murray, Fleury being a backup at $5 million is not ideal, but you're not paying Murray that much, so I'm not even sure you can hold that against them because they paid him.
That's just like the Nashville defense. You don't care about Subban making $9 million because the other guys.
It's by committee.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting.
I mean, I'd have to look over their whole roster. There may be a guy where you say, I don't know if I'd want to pay him that kind of money. But
Kessel, Crosby, Malkin, you get production pretty much out of everyone. Letang is a guy who's banged up a lot, so that's not a bad contract. It's just an unfortunate set of circumstances, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. That one is, and Justin Schultz is on value.
As long as you win, you can probably justify
anything. Winning justifies anything.
And that's the truth with Anaheim. Even with Perry getting paid what he's paid, if they keep winning, then
yeah,
you don't have to worry about it.
Man,
and
I'm
if he steps
at,
up.
I'm looking at Arizona. Like, you got David Bolin's contract there. Now, he's never going to play again. But
they got Datsyuk, they got Pronger, they got
Bolin.
Well, yeah,
those they picked up to get to the bottom. But, like, Goligoski was supposed to be this, like, analytic signing and that. They gave him a boatload of money at 31 years old. Like, that completely contradicts what they were trying to do there.
Yeah, like that Wiz kid, I'm not sure what the hell he's doing out there.
Well, and they signed Luke Shen. But he at value at 1.25, I don't think he's an analytics dream either.
I think they knew they were going to be horrible.
Yeah, and
that's
they
the
added
thing about Arizona. You do have to – you got to fill a roster sheet out every single night.
That's kind of where I was getting with, you know, the Perry contract. Because you're going to – if you believe you got to move past him, there'll be somebody that'll take that money and that player.
You just might have to eat some of it.
Oh, yeah.
Is my point. And if you're eating it, then ultimately – like it was – although, I mean, you never know. I hear you. You never know with the salary cap world. You never know with where owners are coming in, where GMs are coming in. But
right.
They're just – I think you got to be real careful. And I don't know if this is the case with Perry. Maybe he snaps back out of it. But if you're paying him 8.6, you're paying him to score 40 goals
yeah.
and be the stud that he was when he won an MVP a few years ago. And I'm not sure we're going to see that Corey Perry again.
Right.
As for – what is buzzing online, there is a picture circulating of Connor McDavid held hostage.
That was...
Is that at the Edmonton airport?
Yes, YEG, because to fly now, you have to go through... You have to clear customs and security through a regular airport. It used to be you drive up at the private airport, and security and customs come on the bus. But because of Homeland and because of what's been going on in our world, you have to go through the regular channel. So Connor McDavid drives to the airport and walks through. So he's going to get accosted by a fan here and there.
This picture, should absolutely end the crying Jordan face era. That should not exist anymore, and it's got to be McDavid face because he is so
right.
mortified because it's like a pair of grandparents
yes.
who are holding him by the arm and by the hand, as if he's going to escape from a prison, and they are in charge of making sure he doesn't get away.
It is the greatest picture.
And he is just like, what the hell is going on here?
He's trying to be polite. Put it that way. He's trying to be polite. But I don't know.
He must get
I know a lot of guys that would just say, please don't touch, like, don't touch me. Like, don't. Well, grab my arm.
I'm fine with the lady.
Would you not? I don't
the
want,
man,
if you don't know me, I don't want you grabbing my arm.
Yeah,
touching.
It's really weird.
The man has the awkward handshake that he's pulled into kind of a hug.
Well, and he's got the other arm wrapped around his arm. Like, he's
right.
got the handshake and arm grab.
Like, holding on. It just...
Like, if McDavid started walking away, that guy would be dragging on the floor holding onto his arm. Like, that's how tight his grip is.
I couldn't stop laughing. We actually ran it, who won the night. Last night on TH2N.
With that picture?
Yes. I just said these two people who accosted Connor McDavid won the night.
Now I don't think they're heroes necessarily, but they're a part of history because this picture it'll be around for the rest of time. That should be in the Hall of Fame.
One of the tweets I saw, what was hilarious, was that was the face he had when he was...
ended up in Edmonton.
Ended up in Edmonton or whatever, when when the Oilers won the draft.
It's a good point. I have seen that face before now that I think about it. When the Oilers won the draft lottery a couple of years ago, it's the exact same
face. I wonder if you can...
Face.
He had
can
a
you
Scrabble face going on.
Can you cut and paste? Because I believe when they did win the lottery, they did pan to Connor. We've got to see a side-by-side.
No way. Don't even do that because the Edmonton fans will just...
Oh, we're doing
I'm
it.
I'm from Edmonton.
We're 100%.
Believe me, the Edmonton
it.
Fans love it. They're basking, and this kid enjoys Edmonton by all accounts. Like, he's having a hell of a time there this year. So it's kind of, we're just tongue-in-cheek having some fun.
All right, let's make sure we get, Steph, if you can do it, although I don't think you know how to do it, but
no.
if someone can possibly
Somebody
do it.
Somebody will put it together.
Put a... Not even a swap, like a face swap. Just put them side by side
just to see what it looks like.
McDavid being accosted at the Edmonton airport on his way to Anaheim, and McDavid when the draft lottery was finally completed and he realized he was going to Edmonton. This one, he's leaving Edmonton. He's not happy. The first one, he was going to Edmonton, and he certainly wasn't happy. We should point out Kendrys Morales is day-to-day with a left hamstring strain. He will not play tonight, which means the lineup card goes from
not even good,
just the worst thing you've seen in your life, to something somehow even worse than that. This is the worst lineup I can recall seeing in the majors.
Really?
It is so bad. Now, Donaldson's out. Tulo's out. Now Morales is out. Doesn't help that Bautista is... You talk about a guy who looks like he could be done. It's not early anymore. This guy's had some hacks. Like, he's had enough opportunity to break out of this slump, and he just cannot do it.
After a solid spring training, too. That's what's surprising about it.
That's why spring training is completely... Yeah, meaningless. Doesn't mean anything. All right, Craig Button will join us, and he'll help us tee up the night. We'll look back on Ottawa getting past the Rangers as well. We haven't touched on that. And already the rumors and reports about what could happen with Kyle Lowry. Tell you about that. Morgan Riley in about 45 minutes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. All right, Jerry's percentages in about an hour. My understanding is Jerry has some opening remarks again. So make sure you tune in to find out what Jerry has to say, and then we'll see what kind of hot takes he brings to the table this week. We've got Morgan Riley on the show at 5:05.
Can we ask him if there's a curfew over there? I guess Hockey Canada has to have a curfew.
He's not over there, is he?
No, he's not at the World, but he's been there.
Mitch Marner was on. I kept thinking Mitch Marner was on Leafs Lunch today.
He was on a year ago.
Yeah, that's right.
And
maybe we can ask him then when he was over there.
Yeah, we'll ask him.
He can out some of the guys that are on the trip.
Yeah, we'll get to that in about 35 minutes. But we got Craig Button joining us, and I believe Craig is down in Anaheim ahead of Game 7 tonight. So we'll get him to help us tee up both Game 7s, and we'll look back on Ottawa getting past New York. Do they have a shot at whoever they're going to play in the next round? We'll get to Craig in 2 minutes. Shout out to Steph behind the glass, moving and shaking and making things happen. Go to our Overdrive account on Twitter, at Overdrive1050, and she has posted...
Did she do that, or did she just retweet somebody that sent it in?
I'm telling you, she did it all on her own. And she's got McDavid at the draft lottery on the left, and then McDavid being held hostage at the Edmonton Airport on the right.
There is a touch of Scrabble in both of them.
Both of them, there's some terror behind those eyes. Can't believe I'm going to Edmonton, and can't believe this guy's holding onto my arm the way he is.
They're just a nice couple, but they must be. I mean, how tall is Connor McDavid?
5'10", 5'11"?
I thought he was a little tall, maybe 6. I thought he was
maybe 6 feet. I don't think he's that tall.
He's all of 6 feet.
I thought he was 6'1" or something.
In Florida, he's...
I thought he was like 6'1", but either way, that couple is, they're a little shorter.
I'll bet you Craig knows his height.
Should check to see if Craig was in the background in that picture.
All right, here's Craig Button, our TSN hockey analyst. Do you know how tall Connor McDavid really is? Not what they list on NHL.com, but what his real height is.
I think he's 6'5".
Very precise.
There
Thank you.
You.
I wasn't expecting that.
Well, why you asked me? I gave you an answer. What were you expecting me to say? 6'4"?
I don't know.
Did you say 5'9"? What were you expecting, Brian?
I thought you ballpark it or round it up, but the 6'5" is very precise. So, I appreciate that.
You expect that from me, don't you?
That's right, man.
Yes,
absolutely. Have you seen the picture of McDavid?
Now,
right.
I got a question for Jeff and Jamie, real quick.
Yes.
Have you ever had a fan put the death grip on you like that, asking for a photo or an autograph?
I think you know me well enough, Craig.
That's what McDavid said it was like.
I think you know me well enough. I would not allow it. It would just be don't touch, please.
I've ventured down into that road. I think it's not a big deal. Like I think you have to. Enjoy the process. He didn't look like he was enjoying the process. He looked like he was being held hostage. So,
Well, he honestly felt that he might not make his plane, I think, at that moment in time.
I'll say this about that Anaheim rink. They are doing a disservice to every fan base in the league if they don't have pictures of that old guy passed out to every fan on the rink tonight. That should be the poster, right? Don't you think they should hand that out? 20,000 photos of that guy and just staple them all over the rink, and maybe you'll terrify McDavid into not wanting to even play a shift.
That's awesome.
Yeah, have them right on the glass, right? Every fan puts them right on the glass.
Exactly.
In the warm-up.
How you feeling about tonight's game? You got a read on it?
You know what? I think you get to a game seven. I don't think anybody could ever say, hey, it's going to be a blowout or whatnot. But the one thing is that for me, the Oilers have been a team that, you know, they're not just happy being here. They're not a team that's just going, oh, yeah, this is nice. You know, we'll be in this game if we don't win. What a great learning process. They're here to win it. They're here with the mindset that, and not only are they here to win it, they think they can win it. And there's a certain amount of, I don't want to say confidence, but an air of belief that this isn't about just the good talk. It's about they know they played well enough. They feel that they could have already won this series. So they just feel that it's taken them an extra game to get to this point, and they feel they can win. For me, the Anaheim Ducks defense is pretty good. But I think that the move with Draisaitl to the middle of the ice has switched things up for the Anaheim Ducks. And I think that has now created an advantage for the Edmonton Oilers. It might not be big, but I think it's enough to swing it.
It's a pretty massive adjustment, isn't it, Craig? Earlier on in the series, we were talking about just Kessler all over McDavid, and now we're talking about Anaheim. Can you handle this Draisaitl at center ice? He's been a machine, and we talked about it yesterday. If you're Buffalo, although Sam Reinhart is a nice player, they must be thinking, man, missing that guy, that's a pretty big miss.
Well, when you think about the middle of the ice, you think about, and I've said this now a few times, I think Draisaitl is looking like he can be to McDavid what Malkin is to Crosby. Well, I mean, when you start to use comparisons like that, you're talking about big time. And absolutely, Jeff, you look back and go, oh, boy, wouldn't that – imagine Eichel and Draisaitl. How would that look in Buffalo? They'd look pretty nice, wouldn't it? So, I mean, the other thing about Draisaitl, he's a big man too. So Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is going to have to play positionally and play off of a Ryan Getzlaff. I'll tell you what, Draisaitl can go right up with him, handle the puck, say, hey, play against me. Whereas Jim Hopkins doesn't have that same ability.
With Greg Button, we were discussing what Pierre LeBrun had to say earlier today on the lunch, where he's, I guess, reporting or stating, maybe it's his opinion, but if the Ducks lose tonight, major changes are coming to Anaheim. What would that really look like? I mean, would they ever think of moving past Getzlaff, Perry, and Kessler as their big three, their veteran core up front?
I think they would have to.
I think, guys, that's the how
is one thing, and that's a good question, too. But let me just quickly, April 29th of last year, Bruce Boudreau got fired, and that stopped being about the coach any longer. We're about four game seven at home misses. And the other thing, too, go back and look. The longest it's taken an opponent to score in those four game sevens is 6 minutes and 19 seconds. They've been behind right from the outset and never in the game. So, you're right about the how, Jeff, and that now becomes, it's great to say, well, make changes, but if they fail tonight, then they have to look at making changes in some way, shape, or fashion because, you know, new coach, same group. And now what do you say? It can't be the coach. You got to start saying, hey, these guys haven't delivered when it's mattered the most.
With Craig Button, well, the same thing applies with Washington tonight, right? They're very similarly built. They've got kind of a fusion of youth and veteran presence, but they've had a new coach over the past couple of years. And I thought they looked the most comfortable they've looked through two series when they were down 3-1. And go down 3-1, all of a sudden, it's like the weight of the world was off their shoulders, and they could just play, and they dominated Game 6. That would be terrifying for me if I'm Pittsburgh. Going back and reviewing that tape, it was not even close. Yet I am curious to find out what the mentality and the psyche of Washington will look like tonight, considering they're back in the driver's seat. Do you think that could factor in, Craig, that now they're supposed to win again, they're favored again, and maybe that could be a little bit too heavy for them?
Well, and that's the thing. You know, you want to get to the other side of it saying, no, it wasn't too heavy for them. And, you know, one of the things that really stood out for me in game six for the Penguins, you know, you don't have Letang. Daly goes out of the lineup. And to me, before the playoffs started, I felt they needed two of those three, Daly, Letang, and Mata, to be in the lineup. Well, they're missing two of those three. I thought they got absolutely overwhelmed on the their defense day. From Ian Cole to Ron Hainsey to everybody in that group, they just couldn't carry any play. So I don't care how good your forwards are, they couldn't get the puck. And I think for the Washington Capitals, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, we got to play, and we got to play hard, and we got to find a way. But I think they have found the way now. And I don't think that the Pittsburgh Penguins have a way out of it. So if the Washington Capitals don't win this game seven, then I think it fully comes onto the Washington Capitals for a failure to take advantage of a scenario that doesn't present itself all the time. So that's how I see it. But, you know, you get to a game seven, Brian, as you point out, and you consider that, you know, now they're back into the, okay, this is where we should have been in the driver's seat. Well, drive it home then.
It's pretty amazing that Ottawa is sitting there waiting for them. And we haven't talked a lot about Ottawa all year. They've been a very resilient group. They've had some very dramatic things happen to them. Craig Anderson's wife being diagnosed with cancer.
Right.
The Clark MacArthur story. And there's been a lot of different
Carlson
things that have come.
Carlson injured. Down the stretch.
And yet they roll through Boston in six. They get through New York in six. And I'm not sure they're going to get a lot of fanfare going into the next round either, Craig. I mean, I think people are going to expect that Washington or Pittsburgh will blow the doors off Ottawa. But when do we give Ottawa some credit? Could you see them potentially getting through to a Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, I could. I mean, we go through this all the time. We look at the matchups and we go, oh, well, that's it. I mean, who? Chicago. There was no way Nashville was going to beat them. Well, not only did they beat them, it only took them four games. You know, one thing about the Ottawa Senators, they've lived on those margins all year long. They've been in close games. You know, they haven't overwhelmed anybody. They haven't really been overwhelmed by anybody. So they're comfortable in those tight games. And, you know, when you get to, you know, this point in the season for the Ottawa Senators, we're talking 94 games deep. Well, you are what you are at this point in time. You are now that team that can find a way. You can be resilient. You can find a way to be comfortable in those tight games, and they are. So I don't think you can overlook them. I mean, Craig Anderson has shown that he can be a big-time player. And, hey, listen, I mean, you talk about big-time players. There is no bigger big-time player right now than Erik Karlsson anywhere. I mean, he just controls the game in every facet. So I don't think you can overlook them, and I think you have to look at them as a real serious team that could get to the Stanley Cup final.
Well, lucky for Karlsson, this is a coming-out party. We had never heard of him before. No one had ever seen him play. And finally, he's getting the attention.
Ian Mendez said that yesterday, and it was a great point. It's like, this guy's won two Norrises, and it's a coming-out party? Like, come on.
It's an embarrassing narrative to suggest this is a coming-out party.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean,
well,
right, Craig?
Let me say this real quick. How about Chris Kreider? I mean, does he not know that the best player in the Ottawa Senators is the captain, wears 65, and he comes out looking the same every shift? How did he leave him so wide open on that winning goal?
That was crazy, man.
Yeah, it was.
Wasn't it, Jeff?
It was
Maybe
terrible.
Maybe he didn't know how good Karlsson was.
Yeah, he's still trying to figure that out.
He's still trying to figure out who this guy is. Yeah, but Kreider, I mean, that's the knock on him, is he's got all the tools but no toolbox to put it in.
Well, I mean, when you watch that game, right, we talk, I mean, making light of the narrative about the coming out party for Erik Karlsson. Well, I mean, the guy that looked the most surprised last night was Chris Kreider, and you're like, what? Really? And you know what? You got to be able to think the game as well as, you know, play the game. And right now, Chris Kreider looks like that player. To me, Jamie, he is exactly what he is. And yeah, he's not going to change. And you have to decide as an organization, are we going to be satisfied with this? Are we going to accept this, put him in spots that he can handle? Because he's not changing. I mean, how many times have we heard this over time? Oh, yeah, he's ready for a breakout 40-goal season. No, he isn't. And I'll tell you guys this. He's the same player today, and albeit, hey, look, he's an NHL player. But the same things that plagued him in high school are the same things that plague him now in the NHL.
Great stuff, buddy, as always. Enjoy the action tonight. We'll do it again real soon.
We will. Thank you, guys.
There's our main man, Craig Button. And that Erik Karlsson is something else.
Man, is he ever.
He's the best player in the world right now.
He was on fire. And it was weird to see him limp off the ice when he was walking with Brian Morris. He got off the ice and was being ushered to an interview. You knew he was in pain. You've fought through injuries where the adrenaline carries you, but when the game's over, you're like, comes down immediately. You're like, oh yeah, forgot that this thing's bothering me.
Yeah.
Of the seven Canadian teams, I would suggest they got the least amount of national coverage this year.
Absolutely.
Outside of the stories that weren't about the ice.
Yeah, because Line A in Winnipeg, correct?
Right, but like I'm saying, like the Craig Anderson story, of course people were focused on that. But in terms of what they were actually doing on the ice, in Eastern Canada, 95% of the oxygen was sucked up by the Leafs and the Habs.
Yeah.
And out west, because of Line A, and then the other teams were either pushing for playoff spots or tire fires like Vancouver. And Vancouver's such a bigger market. Ottawa really didn't get a lot of love, didn't get a lot of attention. And yet, if Edmonton goes out tonight, they're the last one standing. Yeah. They're the Canadian team that keeps plugging away.
Yeah, they
now they'll get the attention.
They win.
And they'll lose in five or something like that.
Well, it's just they've had. But it's almost like Boucher's like, yeah, we're the underdog. Let's keep it rolling. Like
that was so painful this round. Wait until the next round.
Well, they will be the underdog, clearly.
They will be, but he's used up all the ammo.
But you can't beat it to death. I mean, come on. You can say, you know what? Look at their point totals. Look where they ended up. We might be the underdogs. But if you're going to beat it to death, I think your players will look at it and say, give your head a
we've won.
Have an idea.
Have an idea. Thank you.
Have an idea.
Hit Boucher with one more Eckersley.
And have an idea.
And you know it's coming. He's going to have a Shakespearean
script. I know, but I just hope
script.
He doesn't beat it to death. Because if I'm one of his players, I'd be like, come on, dude.
He will. I guarantee you he will. He did against the Rangers when they were up 2-1. He's like, if we don't play our best game, we're not even close. Like we're crushed.
But
we're
he's just one of those coaches that always, he's like Hitch. Hitch and Daryl Sutter use that type of narrative all the time. I don't know if Lavi does, but they use something to gravitate to motivate you. Like, see what they're saying about you or that type of stuff. We're the underdogs, and some guys buy into it. It gets real old real quick.
I want John Gibbons to start using that because that would be 100% genuine. Yeah. Gibbons comes out and gives his team a pep talk and just says, this is the worst team in the league. We're brutal. But hey, go out there and have some fun, guys, and let's try to pick up a win.
Yeah, it's not good.
Morales not playing tonight. They are the worst team on paper in the league.
I wonder what kind of stress the trainers are under. When you have that many guys, I've seen it before where the coach is like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, it's a
they apparently hired these sports science people to give them the best training, the best facility, the best everything, the best nutrition to prevent injury, and now they all go down. It's like, what the hell was all that for? What were you? What is this? What are you guys doing?
I could see someone losing their gig, which may be completely unjust and unfair. But at some point, someone's going to go down and say, "Let me get this straight: Donaldson, Tulowitzki, Morales, Happ, Sanchez, Martin. What the hell is going on down here? what is going on here?" But the thing is about the guys, like Sanchez is still young. Everyone else is over 30.
Right.
Like, that's what happens in baseball, especially when you play on turf.
Yeah.
Old guys get banged up, man.
Yeah, it happens.
And now they're 12-21, and they're running this team out every night. As Phil might say,
it's not good, right?
It's not good, eh?
Apparently there's some sound of McDavid, like, answering a question about the couple.
All right, let's come back and play that. Morgan Riley in about 20 minutes. Jerry's in 45. The McDavid picture response next. Morgan Riley will join us at 5:05. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. Two game sevens tonight. Washington at home against Pittsburgh and then Edmonton and Anaheim. You can hear that game right here on TSN 1050.
Yeah, good one.
Game seven, Oilers Ducks. And really, no one cares about the game anymore. Everyone's just talking about the McDavid face and him at the airport in Edmonton trying to get out of there. And this old couple grabs him and holds on for dear life, demanding a picture. And he looks so awkward. He's kind of an awkward guy anyway.
Right.
But this brings it to a completely different level.
Yeah, it's he looks really rattled.
I don't like that stuff. You know how I don't like touching. I would have said, just stand there. Don't grab my arms, please.
It's really cringeworthy. So he was asked about it, I guess, today. Like, we got game seven tonight.
Yeah.
And people have to know what he thought about the picture and the old couple, and here's what McDavid said.
No, that picture is a little bit weird. I don't know. I don't know how you're supposed to feel comfortable when they're holding you like that. So I was pretty much in a death grip. So I was trying to get on the plane as fast as I could. But you know, I was obviously stopped up pretty good there.
That's a pretty good answer. I mean, there's some personality there for the kid.
It's
for
honest.
Him. Yeah, it's
for him. That's Louis C.K.
Yeah, that was.
That's a shtick.
It was pretty funny though.
The death grip.
I love that term. And yeah. It's true. Everyone's had it. Every grandparent on earth has hit their grandkids with a death grip.
The Nana had the death grip on his left arm.
Oh, the guy looks like Gilbert Godfrey.
He does kind of look like Gilbert.
Just got that smile.
Fake jibs,
They're
you think?
So excited.
He's got some nice teeth. He's got McCabe teeth.
He does. All right, Morgan Riley in about 10 minutes. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. Hour 2 up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.